We shouldn't be dependent on the few seconds per hour that we spend on the wall to have that be the only time we improve. If we're spending, 70% of our time, 80% of our time on the ground, how can we make that more potent?
Hey y'all, I'm Ryan Devlin, and welcome to the Struggle Climbing Show Pro Clinic with Coach Nate Drolle on how we can all identify and then obliterate the barriers that are keeping us from improving technically as climbers. I'm talking about how we move on boulders and routes that we're climbing on and what is holding us back. In this conversation, Nate shares 14 points on the topic, every single one of them an absolute masterclass in their own right. My mind was just totally blown again and again and again in this conversation as Nate peered into my climber's soul, and I am 100% positive. That's right. 100% positive that you are going to have a similar experience as Nate identifies these common barriers, explores why they occur to all of us at any level that we're climbing at, and then offers up actionable drills and beta to help us remove them from our climbing lives so that we can all level up in big ways without needing to add an ounce of finger strength to the equation. The free version of this Pro Clinic here is being sponsored by Scarpa, who also sponsors Nate Drolle as an athlete and this podcast. Thank you, Scarpa. And if you all listened to the last interview that I did with Nate on analysis, one of the big recommendations he had for me was to switch to a softer shoe so that I could feel more in my feet and hopefully take more off of my fingers and be a little bit more athletic on the project that I'm working out at the Red. And so he recommended specifically the Veloce Ls, the Veloce lace-ups. And so I got a pair. And I just pulled them out of the box a couple days ago as I got out to the Red for the first time in a little bit. And man, I am telling you, those things right out of the box felt incredible. I think it's the most comfortable Scarpa that I've put on. And that's saying a lot because I've been climbing in Scarpas for 10 years now. And they performed so well. I could feel the rock in a way that I hadn't been feeling it with the stiffer instincts that I've been using, which I really love for towing into pockets and getting on some of the smaller edges. And so I'm really just playing around with this notion here of a stiffer shoe versus a softer shoe. And it's just really cool to be able to feel that, like that immediate feedback on the rock. And it goes hand in hand with this conversation here that I'm having with Nate on movement. Y'all can learn more about everything that Scarpa is making by hitting that link in your notes or just pop by thestruggleclimbingshow.com/Scarpa. They have got a shoe to help you take your climbing to the next level. Scarpa, no place too far. All right, let's get ready to bust through some barriers in this masterclass on movement with Nate Drolle.
I'm always writing everywhere. So I've got like Word docs. I've got a big journal, small journal. And so like before this, I was like, yeah, I think I've got this all locked in. And I was like, wait, the big journal. We haven't looked into that yet. So yeah,
it's like a little window inside the mind of a madman right now. There's sticky notes and there's notebooks and you've got shit written on the bottom of an old climbing shoe and it's all going to come together.
Exactly.
I got such great feedback after our first installment. I'm so glad we broke the conversation into two parts at your suggestion, the analysis, and now getting into kind of barriers with technique and movement. I think it's such a good way to create an understanding and then now get into some action and some beta. I've been implementing a few of the things that we've talked about with regard to just like really focusing on the feet, employing softer shoes, trying to get those hips really, the shoulders to turn along with the hips. And some too, I think, more immediate payoff than others, or at least I've adapted and adopted them easier. But lots for me to work on. But there were some like immediate things that I noticed both cool. When I was training at the gym and when I got back out of the project post conversation. So I was really excited to see that.
Cool, man. Yeah, I'm stoked to hear all about it. Yeah, I've been like over here in the dark, just waiting this entire time, being like, okay, cool. Like, how's it going?
Oh, good. Well, yeah, I guess we could, this is my show. Why don't we take a few minutes and talk about just how it's been going since we last chatted, and then we can move into the Pro Clinic proper with all of your various notebooks there. So yeah, I can tell last week I took off. I was in Florida for spring break with the kids and really tried to just like decompress and unload. And I think it was good to have a deload week because I have been going really hard in the spring. But prior to that, I had about 10 days after we had our conversation to when I took the little spring break getaway and was able to make it out to the project once and able to get to the gym a handful of times. So the first thing I did after we talked, it was like an hour after we talked, I went straight to the gym and I got on the tread wall and I cranked it back kind of to the angle that the force is on. And I was just so hyped thinking about my feet after seeing in the video that you showed where I was having a tendency to do these high steps and not push off on the lower foot, but essentially just kind of immediately rock over on the higher foot and let that lower foot just dangle there. And you like totally busted me with that video of me on the moon board. And so I started climbing a little slower pace than like a slower speed on the tread wall than I had been doing so I could really be intentional. And I was just not trying to think about the hands at all. And I was just thinking about the feet and especially that lower foot. And I was trying to high step less. But then even when I was doing the high steps, I was really focusing on pushing off and like extending my toes.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Like really engaging the calf muscle, you know, like I could even see in the video, I took a video of myself, like the calf muscle would like ball up because I was like really toeing, you know, pushing up like I was trying to raise on my tippy toes as I was doing those moves. And man, it's one of those like instant feedback is such a cool thing. I just had the biggest smile on my face because
oh, cool.
I could feel it. I could feel the weight being taken off of my fingers. And as a result, this is the same circuit that I've been doing over and over again, like a minute 15 on and 2 minutes off. And I went longer and with less pump and a lower heart rate than I had been. And I guess I've probably been building a little bit of fitness, but like, I could feel the difference. It was really cool just to be very focused. And I was so focused on my feet, like it wasn't happening intuitively, but I think in time, hopefully it will. So I can not think about my feet so much, but
totally
just to have that immediate feedback was really, really cool.
Man, that's awesome. To me, that's such an exciting thing because it can kind of go both ways. Practice is the opposite of performance. So a lot of times whenever I'm telling people to work on things, I'll say, hey, this is good to work on, but don't expect it to immediately make you feel better. Like sometimes it will if it's enough of a deficit, but a lot of times, you know, you've got hundreds of thousands of moves under your belt not using the low foot. So
right.
It's totally normal if it's like, this just takes a lot of my mental energy. This feels clunky. It's clumsy, you know, and that's how good practice tends to feel, but it doesn't normally immediately transfer to performance. So it's so fun when that does happen, because there are definitely times where it's like you have that little aha moment of like, oh, like I don't have it yet, but like I'm on the road and it's already like I can already tell this is the road I want to be on.
I like what you said there is that, you know, practice is not performance, just with continued work and willingness to be a little bit awkward or clunky or have it not feel flowy. I can see how it'll move into that. And I'm psyched because I could immediately feel the difference, the fingers. Where maybe I wasn't as much was, well, the one leg drill, man, not doing good on that one.
Good,
I should have taken
good.
The videos of that because it was like Flailsville, but I'll try to do a little bit more. But that was really weird for me to try to climb and just use the one leg. It just felt so bad, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess that's one that I just maybe need to stick with a little bit more, or maybe I just need to take the difficulty level down a little bit. I'm not sure what you would recommend there, but like, God, it was just, I felt like I had never climbed before in my life.
I love it. You know, I mean, there's no time we get better faster than when you've never climbed before in your life. You know, beginners get better every day. It kind of depends with that one. Like, because if it feels like you're just doing assisted campusing, then it's like, okay, let's scale it back, maybe change things. But if you're like, man, I don't know how to coordinate this, I feel clunky, like, where do my feet go? I want both of them. I'm more okay with that. And I even recommend to people, like, pick things that traverse, pick things that zigzag that are weird rather than straight up and down ladders. I want it to feel goofy.
I'll keep working on that one. It required me to turn a lot, be a lot twistier, turn the hips, and really, you know, find ways of pressing in with the one foot that I had. So like,
cool.
Trying to prevent a barn door, or, you know, like open up my hip in a different way to where I would normally just like be able to throw a heel hook or paste something, you know, really try to engage that or the shoulders in a different way. So it was requiring a lot of thought, and I'm now like kind of having that be a part of my warm-up and just to try to get a little bit more repetition. And so maybe it'd be like the last part of a warm-up would be doing some what would be easy problems with 2 feet, but like makes it a little bit harder with the one. So yeah, I'm adding some repetition of that in there. And then the other one that I was trying to focus on, and then we can talk about getting outside for a second before we hand things off to you. But this I was doing drop knees, and this relates to the project as well, but the upper body wasn't really following, as you were noticing in some of the videos. Mm-hmm. Like lots of action down there. The knee was dropping really good. The hips were going in. My shoulders weren't getting that full extension. And so I have tried that a little bit on the spray wall, just finding opportunities to put myself in that position. And again, I think that one, I do feel the difference when I fully engage. I think maybe I've been not active long enough or lazy or whatever kind of the terminology is there with my upper body long enough where, like you said before, I've done it 100,000 times that way, and I've only done it a handful of times now where I'm really trying to extend and reach in with those shoulders as I'm twisting the hips. And so that one, again, feels a little awkward. Like, I feel like I'm having to lock off more on the hand that's, you know, that I'm twisting into. And yeah, maybe it's just like I need to take a little more time, or maybe I'll shoot some videos and send them your way and you know, see if I'm implementing that like the way that you were suggesting I do.
Yeah. I mean, I always love to see video.
Yeah.
But with a lot of moves, like things like twisting, things like momentum, anything that when you do them right helps you cover more ground more easily, it tends to be a lot easier to practice them with really big moves. Like momentum's a perfect example. It's very hard to use good momentum for a 1-inch move. Like,
all right.
It feels absurd. And so even people who are very static, if I say, hey, get on the wall, do a big double dyno, which is just momentum used to its most extreme, a lot of people can coordinate it pretty well. And so it's a matter of, I really like with these things. So I would say, trying to line up your twists and like with your drop knees, so you're getting hips and shoulders to move together. I would say get on easy climbs, skip holds, intentionally do big moves, because those big exaggerated movements are where it's going to initially feel natural. And then we can kind of scale from there and start doing smaller moves or more lateral moves, kind of things that feel a little awkward. But we want it to just be just slightly uncomfortable or just slightly weird for you, rather than having it be where you're like, man, I have no clue what's going on. I feel like I've had all these limbs for my whole life. I don't know why suddenly I can't coordinate them. Like, we don't want to fully go that far.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I like that, just like finding an opportunity where I can essentially reach to the point that hits that balance between like a little discomfort or a little awkward without it being like just totally foreign. And I should be able to replicate that on the spray wall, or if the angle's feeling a little too steep, just on some easier set problems where there's a million choices of holds and I can just kind of skip past one. Yeah, I'll work on that more. You know, where I did feel that actually work for me was out on the force. And,
amazing.
You know, the move that we're talking about is just like that red point crux for me, right as you leave the last bolt and head towards that last sequence into the chains. It starts, for me at least, and a lot of people kind of do it this way, but not everyone, for me, with throwing like a left drop knee, locking off on the right hand and reaching up really high with the left hand to get into that first pocket of mm-hmm. that sequence. And prior to the last time out, that had been a limit reach for me. And I was getting it, feeling like I was fully outstretched and having to really engage my fingers and lock down on it until I could reset my feet. And when I went back, I implemented two things that we had been talking about. One, I engaged the feet more. So on the drop knee, rather than just dropping my knee so I could turn my hips in, I actually like pushed against that foot. So it dropped, but it also raised my hips up rather than just dropping me closer to the wall, but like lifted me up probably a couple inches. So I was like pushing actively with that left drop knee and then going up on my toes on my right leg, my low leg, and then also twisting, focusing on twisting more. And, you know, surprise, surprise, I got into that pocket without it feeling like a stretch. And I was able to get my fingers deeper into it, reset my feet, and reach up to the next one without it feeling like a limit move, which it shouldn't. Coming off of that rest, it should, the first couple of moves should feel totally fine. And then you've got like three moves that are, you know, kind of 100% effort. So I that was awesome. That was really awesome to feel. I didn't send the project. I was doing it in pieces still. I'm trying to work on some low points and still sorting out a little bit on that last sequence. But to feel that was really cool. And I will try to replicate that feeling, you know, just as I'm doing my training here at the gym.
Cool. Perfect. And I think that is a great way to try and implement newer skills to projects, you know, because earlier I was saying it's hard to use new skills during performance, but adding it kind of one move at a time where you say, okay, I'm going to go up and I'm going to try this move and kind of A/B test between what I normally do versus this, that tends to be a good way to add these things in versus if you were like, okay, I'm going to pull on from the ground on the hardest route I've ever tried and I'm going to implement this new strategy for every move, you know, you might not even get to the first rest doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's awesome. Man, I'm excited to hear that. That felt so good.
Yeah, thanks, dude. Well, it's really cool to be able to talk with somebody like yourself who we've never worked together in person. We had one call, which was the analysis episode, and you've really honed in on things. I'm sure there's many, many more areas where I can improve, no doubt. We all can. But to have identified a couple things just on that phone call and for me to be now seeing the results of them just feels amazing. So I'm grateful for that. And the last thing I'll mention, and we can then shift into our pro clinic here, but you had recommended that I extend my warm up a little bit more. I was just doing like a flashboard warm up and bolt to bolting the force, brushing the holds and then giving it a rip. You had suggested, hey, go over to Solar Collector and get in some pitches. And so I did. And I was out there with Dave Scott and Audrey, and they, you know, both of them have climbed all those routes a million times, and Dave had them all dialed. And so we warmed up on one of those 11s there, Mona Lisa Overdrive or something, Greenhorn, you know, one of those kind of like 11A or 11Bs right there that are hard. Everything on that wall is really hard for me for whatever reason. Yeah. But, you know, it felt good to kind of try hard. And I think I took in the middle, like I wasn't like going for any sort of glory, but felt good to like put a good pump on. And then those routes on that wall start hard pretty low and then ease up as you go. And so you can get like a nice flowy climbing towards the top. And then you had suggested maybe trying to flash something or you know, do something harder. Yep. Like Superfly is over there and somebody was on that. But Buddha Hole was open and that's an 11D, super classic. And I'd never been on it. And so I was like, well, let's just give it a rip. And so, yeah, Dave went up at first and totally sprayed me down. He's just like got it so dialed, and I don't think that would have been a flashable or let me say on-siteable route for me probably in hindsight, because there are some kind of hard bouldery moves and cryptic moves there. But anyway, with his help, I flashed it and it didn't even feel particularly hard, and that just felt great. I just had like so much psych and stoke, and I hadn't been testing myself on other routes. I had just been basically going to the force. So to get on something that the hardest grade I've ever flashed was 11D, and this matched that, but didn't feel like it was anywhere near my limit. Like I think I probably could have done Superfly if it had been open. We'll see. I don't want to make that guess necessarily. They're totally different routes, but I was just psyched to get on something that is hard and have it go well. And then I just took that psych over to the dark side to work on the project.
Awesome. Man, I'm so stoked that you did that and like went through it and that, yeah, you had that kind of response to it. I think those wins are so important. And it's funny, I actually have kind of a somewhat comedic example from Superfly. Superfly was my first ever 12B on site because that's what it was called at the time. And I had felt like, you know, plateaued for a while, felt like really hung up on trying to like break into this you know, I wanted on-site 12B. I tried a bunch, couldn't, and climbed that one, which I say it's comical because it's now called 12A. But right after that, I think in like that season, I on-sited like 8 more of them. And I don't think it would have happened if I hadn't just had this, you know, mental shift of, oh, I believe I can do this now. Like, I am a 12B on-siter. You know, and it's hilarious because now it's like, it's not. But that wasn't really the point. The point was just getting the win in and like really, yeah, bolstering that confidence. So yeah, man, I'm stoked you
that's cool.
Yeah, went over there and did that.
That's really cool. Well, it's a nice segue. As you said, it was a mental barrier there. We're going to be talking about barriers here today in this pro clinic as it pertains to technique and movement. I'm so hyped to jump in. You've got your 19 notebooks there.
Yes.
So I know you're prepared. But you know, where I want to start this, Nate, is to talk about struggle and you've struggled as it pertains to movement, to technique, your barriers. And so I'm turning the microphone on you for a second here. This is an area of expertise. You're quite experienced, but we're certainly not without our own struggles. So maybe something that's been historical for you that you work through or even currently in your climbing. What have you been struggling with in this area?
I thought we were going to put this one off till the very end of the show. So I was like, cool, I don't need to worry about this yet.
Surprise.
For me, honestly, movement has just never really come naturally. Like learning in general, which sounds silly. Like I've always had very good memory and I think I just always memorized things. And there's a lot of people this way. You talk about, you know, going through high school and a lot of people are like I can just flip through a textbook, memorize as much as I need for, you know, it's like, oh, this test is on 6 chapters. I can memorize the 6 chapters in like 40 minutes and get straight A's. And that was like, that was my version of learning. And it was the same thing when I tried to play guitar. I played for like 5 years through like middle school and high school. Terrible. Like I would just try and memorize things. I never understood how learning worked. And yeah, I mean, it really wasn't until years into climbing that I started to, you know, recognize that that was a thing. Like I used to not understand how anyone could be self-taught in anything. They would just baffled me. Even with movement, like I feel like I have to take things, even now, like take things and turn them over and look at them with every angle. Like if I'm going to learn something, I have to just, you know, experience it as much as possible. Like even if I'm working with a client and they say, hey, I have this weakness, a lot of times I'll go in and for the next few weeks in the gym, I'll go try and mimic their style and I'll mimic what they want to improve on and see like, okay, what is the difference in these two? Just because, yeah, it's just how I feel like I have to do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's like always been a big struggle for me. It's just learning is this slow, cumbersome thing. And it's fun. Like once you start to appreciate it and learn how it works a bit more, now it's something that I just find a lot of joy in, and even just learning how learning works, which if anyone's interested, there's a book called Ultra Learning, which is, I've read a ton of books on this stuff and it's one of my favorites. I feel like they could have made each chapter its own book. Really good, super dense, really fun for me. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if everyone's going to find that fun, but yeah, so I'd say that's been a struggle for me.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. And what better way to learn than to absorb and then need to communicate or teach a concept, because you learn so much through the teaching. And as a coach, I imagine you're just constantly reinforcing some of these things that you've learned and maybe relearning, as you're saying.
No, and it's funny because I'll work with people who, you know, they might say, hey, what do you think about this? And I'll say something and they'll be like, oh, well, why do you think that is? And I'll have to pause and be like, I'm going to get back to you on that. I haven't actually ask that next why yet on this, but thank you. And you'll be receiving an email in a week. Like, yeah, it's,
and then you go back and you hit the books and you get into some ultra learning and then it helps you to process again.
Yeah, it's great. Having clients keeps you honest, like constantly needing to be able to explain things well enough to teach someone and have, you know, have them ask you questions and go through that whole cycle. It's great. I love it. It's one of the reasons I actually just love coaching too. Yeah, it like makes me want to keep learning more just because I'm like, oh, I got to keep up with everyone.
Oh, man, this is exciting because we're about to do some ultra learning here from you, Nate Drolet. Let's dive in. Let's maybe have you set the stage, if we could. The general title and concept of this conversation is barriers when it comes to technique and movement, if I'm understanding correctly how you want to dive into this. But maybe you could even define what you feel a barrier is and just this world of technique and movement, and then we can slice it up however you feel will be best for our audience here to absorb.
Totally. And this is, I would say this is the part that I've like tried to think about a lot, as far as, I mean, oftentimes the question I get is, what is technique? And it's like, oh, that's a million-dollar question. Like, is it a collection of movements? You know, is technique drop kneeing and heel hooking and just having this encyclopedic knowledge of all the different things? Is it how we apply our body? Is it being as efficient as possible? I've heard people say that good technique is about how much weight you can get on your feet and off of your fingers. You know, there are all these different concepts and ideas. And I'm going to probably use some broad phrasing here to try and not trap myself in too much. But the way I look at technique is, how do we use our body most effectively to complete moves and sequences and entire routes? And that's kind of my broad definition. I really like the word effective over efficient. Both are about getting the end goal done, but I think there's a tremendous amount of power in words. And when most people hear efficient, they think the least amount of energy, the least amount of power, and it almost puts technique and skill at odds against strength and power, which I don't think it should be. Like, they work in tandem. Your technique, your ability to move through space and apply your body to the wall should amplify your strength. It should amplify your power. Like, these are two that work in tandem. And for that reason, I don't love efficiency, just because, yeah, if you think, oh, well, good technique is straight arms and drop knees and, you know, never using my muscles. Man, I think that's a very narrow scope. And yeah, I think it ends up kind of shooting us in the foot a little bit.
Yeah, I like that distinction there, because certain moves are going to take a ton of power and a ton of strength, but also the technique to apply that power and strength in the right way. It's just so complicated. It's so three-dimensional, and it's nice to have that more nuanced kind of holistic look to what technique is. In certain scenarios, we do want to probably move the most efficiently. In others, it's applying that strength in ways that are maybe not as efficient, but more effective, as you say, for getting the goal done. So yeah, what a cool way to take a look at that. And anything else with regard to kind of setting the stage here before we start to identify what common barriers would be for helping us to achieve our goals? And especially maybe worth noting that everybody climbs different, you know, there's so many different body styles out there and body types and climbing styles and wall angles. And so how can we effectively have this conversation knowing that there's so many variables out there to those who are listening?
The most effective method I could think of is a scattershot approach, because you're absolutely right. And this is basically here's the thing. We're all different, and it doesn't matter whether you're beginner, intermediate, advanced. We all encounter different scenarios at different times. And a lot of us come into climbing with different backgrounds. Maybe you've got, you know, a hockey background. And so that brings something different than someone who has a pure endurance sport background versus, you know, gymnastics. You know, they're cheaters. But yeah, we're unique people. We have different mindsets. We have different bodies. We're different ages, all these things. So one thing that I want to say about this is, I'm going to have a whole bunch of different points, and y'all are a whole bunch of different people. Some of these things might resonate. They might not. Some of these things you might hear and you're like, oh, I wish I would have heard that when I started climbing, or I wish I would have heard that just last year. Like, I had to learn that the hard way. And some of these things might not, they might be for future you, a few years in the future, like away from now. You know, maybe some, they don't apply to you at all. And, you know, maybe you can keep them around if you have a friend or a climbing partner who you see and it feels like they would benefit from this, you can share that with them. Take full credit. Say you made it up. But yeah.
I like that.
Overall, I'm kind of listing barriers because, defining what technique is very hard, is very hard. And I think that's a very nuanced discussion, and I think it's very useful. But I wanted something that could feel like a more tangible takeaway. So I've got a list of 15. I consolidated a lot. Hold on. 14. Consolidated down from
consolidated.
That's consolidated from multiple notebooks and Word docs. So I've got 14 different points, and these can apply to all different skill levels. I'll try and mention how maybe some apply to higher level versus intermediate versus beginner. But yeah, these can kind of carry up and down to everyone.
Well, we better get into it, man. Hit us with number one.
Okay. Number one, the number one barrier that holds people back from improving their technique and their skill is we often hold on to old techniques and methods that worked really well for us earlier on in our climbing, and maybe they were a wonderful stepping stone that got us to where we are now, but they're now holding us back. And this can show up in a couple of different ways. One can be climbing very slowly. Like when you're new to climbing, it's very frantic, it's very rushed. And there are a lot of things that we can do that work great for beginner climbers. So one is, hey, slow down. That just gives you more time to process what's happening, because climbing is very weird. There's so much you can be thinking about that just slowing down gives you a little more time to think about it. And then, so that's a common one. Twisting, being really reliant on not even just twisting, but kind of the straight arms plus twisting. Twisting is fine, and that's something that should absolutely be used at all levels. But the straight arms is a really interesting thing, because we look at it as a way to climb more efficiently, but you also have to ask the question, how is it more efficient? Because if climbing with straight arms was more efficient for your fingers, every pro would just climb everything with straight arms. But you can pull up any video of V17, you're not going to see many straight-armed moves. And it's because straight arms isn't more efficient for our fingers. It tends to place us further from the wall, and we have to travel on a path further from the wall. But it's much more efficient for our big muscles, our pulling muscles. Also, and this is something I find fascinating, it is more efficient in that it is a lower threshold of coordination. Basically, now you have these two wires connecting you to the wall that you're not having to navigate and maneuver. So you just push with your legs, reach up, grab the next one. Versus when we start bending our arms, it is suddenly a much more three-dimensional world that we live in. We have so many more things that we have moving parts that we are now accountable for, which means they can also hinder us. So for a lot of beginners, you can tell them, hey, climb with straight arms, and immediately it works. And I don't think it's so much because it's more efficient for their pulling muscles. I think a lot of it comes down to it's a much lower coordination demand. It's kind of like throwing training wheels on, or actually looking at, I think Strider bikes are super fascinating, what little kids learn on, where they don't have pedals. Because the thing is, this is just a silly tangent, but this is what I do. Training wheels don't actually really work to teach people how to ride a bike. It teaches you how to pedal and kind of be moving, but it turns out that's not the thing that's really challenging about riding a bicycle. It's the balance. So Strider bikes are little kids' bikes that don't have pedals, so they can, kind of run their feet along the ground, and they learn how to balance at speed. And then, honestly, once they just have the motor capabilities to move their legs on pedals, you put them on a bike and they learn immediately. It's no longer this tear-filled thing of, oh no, the training wheels are gone. I'm about to eat pavement for the rest of the day. I look at straight arms similar to a Strider bike. It gives us just a little leeway. We get to put our feet on the ground. It feels more safe. We don't have all these coordination demands, but we get to go through moves. We get to experience climbing and so much of it that we get to really learn and absorb a lot of what makes climbing climbing. But at a certain point, you got to bend your elbows. I don't know if y'all know this, but the more you bend your elbow, the closer the next hold gets. If you're doing a pull-up, you got to bend your elbows, or I guess you could just front lever muscle up, but Yeah. We have to use our arms.
Yeah, as you're pulling yourself closer to the wall, to the hold, you're getting closer to the next hold.
Exactly. And this is what I was saying earlier. If you look, like if you watch someone climb something like Burden of Dreams, or honestly, just any hard climb that is dependent on really small holds, they bend their arms a lot and they pull themselves into the wall to be under the holds as much as they can, because that's where it's good. You know, you think about dead hanging on small holds. Dead hanging on a 10 mil edge, it's like, yes, that is hard, but a lot of people can do it. Climbing on a 10 mil edge where your body is out away from the wall, very challenging. Suddenly it's like the hanging a 10 mil edge, you know, maybe that's like V7 strength versus climbing on a 10 mil edge on like a 30 degree overhang. That's like V12 strength. Very different things. And a lot of it's just where our body position is. You know, obviously speed and coordination comes in, but yeah. Climbing with straight arms.
Yeah, so just in terms of kind of the barrier that we're noting here on this first point, it's not that what we're learning necessarily as beginner climbers is wrong. It's that it's serving our needs as climbers at that point. And at some point, sticking to those as hard and fast rules become a barrier for us to then bring in more advanced or just more arrows to the quiver of what our climbing could be.
You worded it perfectly. That's exactly how I would say it. Yeah. And, you know, maybe two other examples. One is locking off. Once again, locking off, while it does require strength, it also is a very low coordination demand. We freeze. We just go completely static. We don't have to, nothing is moving. So it's a very low coordination.
Right.
Once again, it can be really useful, but at a certain point in climbing, gets way too hard to lock off every move. Like outside of Daniel Woods and Nathan Williams, no one's out there locking off every move. Like, and if you're not one of them, you know, maybe use some momentum. But last one, and I think this is something that everyone can kind of relate to some degree. When you're very new to climbing as a beginner, most people, we always think with our hands because we're just like looking up and hands need to go up. So most beginners do the same thing. They keep their feet super low. They paddle their hands as far as they can. And then they have to try and chase their feet up behind them. So very early on, they learn, oh, if I do a hand move, I should get my feet up with me. And if you're ever climbing around beginners, you hear them say it to each other all the time. They're like, yeah, get your feet up, get your feet up, use your feet. And wonderful tool. They're absolutely right. You should be getting your feet up as you move your hands. However, after some weeks or months, eventually you hit a point to where you realize, I don't need to get my feet up for every move. Suddenly I'm climbing with my knees in my chest. That doesn't seem effective. So at that point, most of us immediately discard. We're like, oh, yeah, getting our feet up's good, but there's going to be times where this isn't going to serve us. So you get rid of that automatic rule of thumb of keep getting the feet up every move, and you create some nuance there. And it's something most of us do intuitively. And early on, it's very easy because also we don't have much attachment to our climbing style when we've only been climbing a few months. Like we're all terrible. There's nothing to lose by changing things up. But once you've been climbing, you know, 10, 15 years or 5 years, whatever it is, you start to have this attachment to the way you climb and the way it feels to climb and move. And so it can be a little harder to kind of shed these no longer necessary layers.
Yeah, well, that one is a barrier that I'm still working through. I think as we discovered in the assessment is I like to move my feet up. I like high feet. I like uneven feet. Mm-hmm. I try to make foot moves more than hand moves. So I think, you know, that's one where maybe it's a vestige from my earlier days or just something that I've kind of has been a security blanket or a comfort for me. But certainly a barrier, and I've been climbing for a long time. So shall we move on? Shall we keep cranking here?
Yeah, absolutely. The next barrier that tends to hold people back is not learning from the people around you. I mean this in a few ways. One, around you in just purely geographical sense. Or whenever you're climbing, the people you climb around, are you interacting with them? Are you watching them? Do you see, wow, they just did that move in that way. How did they do that? Because it feels differently to me. So geographically, are you working with these people and trying to learn from them? But also people around you in terms of grade level. So are you looking at, you know, if you're climbing V6, yeah, look at other V6 climbers. look at V7 climbers, V8 climbers in this close category and see, you know, what does one step ahead really look like? Like, that can be so helpful. Learning from pros is super useful. That's great. And if you can take some tidbits away from professional climbers, amazing. But kind of meeting yourself where you're at is so important for skill. I have kind of a funny example. I was climbing in the gym the other day and I was climbing with someone and they were like, hey, I don't want to bother you, but you do this cool thing I have never noticed before. I was like, oh, say more. And they were like, yeah,
go on.
Anytime you're going for a hold, you make your hand into the shape of the next hold. I'm like, can elaborate? And they're like, yeah, so right. Whenever you grab a two-finger pocket, you like curl your pointer finger and pinky halfway to the hold. And if you grab a side pull, you make your hand into a side pull shape. And in my mind, I was like, and this was like a newer climber, climbing probably like V4, V5-ish. And in my mind, I was like, I couldn't tell you I did this. And I also wanted to be like, what do you do? Like, are you just like spiking volleyballs every time you're going for a hold? I want to know this. But immediately he was like, I'm going to practice that. And so I never got to know what he did before. But this is a great example of, like, he was able to pick out something that at his level he needed. And it was a great piece. Even though we weren't necessarily like at the same difficulty level, just finding things that are right for you at the right time is so important. And man, it's so fun when that clicks too. When you find something, kind of what we're talking about with you earlier, when you find something that is right place, right time for skill, and then suddenly it's almost like whenever you buy a car and suddenly you start seeing that car everywhere, like they've always been there, but suddenly because you have this awareness of this new thing, you're like, oh, it's everywhere and it applies everywhere. Like this new skill of meeting the holds where they're at with my hand, or this skill of driving off the low foot as I'm high stepping, things like that. Suddenly you start seeing them everywhere and you're like, how did I live without this? And that's cool. I think that's such an important thing to do. And a great way to find that is by interacting with the people around you. You know, interact with the people you're climbing with, but also, yeah, look, are there people, and this doesn't have to be stronger climbers. I personally, like, I love finding someone else who they're just like, no, I'm weak, but I just like climb good things. I'm like, cool. I want to watch the way you move. Like, how are you doing this move? I've never seen you do a pull up in your life. Like, and I would define this as a power move. I'd love to see what's going on. Like, so yeah, I would say, look at the people slightly above you, maybe slightly below you, who you think are more skilled or have these abilities that you might not have. Yeah, I think that is such a valuable way to go.
When we're applying, when we're trying to break through this barrier, is it important that we're watching slightly stronger climbers on the things we're trying to do, or just watch them doing the things that they're doing and trying to just absorb, you know, different ways they move or different tactics they have, that kind of thing?
I would say both. It's funny because there's this weird stigma around having people warm up on your project. And I think one of the benefits of, I used to guide in Waco tanks and I would climb there all the time. And one of the benefits of that is it doesn't matter how hard you climb, someone's warming up on your project. And I remember I was trying Rumble in the Jungle. This is 2011. It's like a V12 out there. And I was guiding Kata Sarvine, who, World Cup climber. She's now one of the coaches for the Austrian national team. And she was like, oh, do you have beta? And I was like, yes, I've been projecting this for many days. I have beta. And she went up it, sent it in like 5 minutes. And what was fascinating was she took all of my beta and just changed the way her body fit into the shapes, but same hand and feet for everything. And I was like, that's fascinating. I wasn't doing any of that. And so I just mimicked her like to a T. All conveniently, we're like, she's only a few inches shorter than me, so my reach makes up for her being a way stronger and just better climber in general. So I just mimicked like the shapes she made and was able to send it right thereafter, which was amazing. Like, so being able to see better climbers and stronger climbers on your project, I think is super useful, but watching them in general. And one of my favorite things to do is if I see someone do a move and I can't comprehend what exactly it is they did, There's a V14 in Switzerland called Casavino, and it's got this crazy sideways campus move. Amazing video of Jimmy Webb doing it, and almost everyone who does it the same way. But it's this really weird, incredibly high coordination move. And the thing I love to do is when I see a move like that, I will just watch it back over and over. I'll put it on like super slow speed, and I will continue to try and watch and process it until I can see what is actually happening? Like, where are they generating this move? Can I, pull back this veil of just wonder and start to try and actually process what's going on? Because it's really easy to look at good climbers and be like, oh, they're just super strong and super good and kind of keep moving on beyond that. But if you can stop and say like, okay, what's actually happening? I think that's super useful. And that's also why I like picking people who are, I know I just mentioned like a V14, but it's why I like picking people who are right at or just above your level, because it doesn't feel quite as, oh, well, they're so much better, I can never apply that. It feels more applicable if you look at the people right around you.
Yeah, for sure. And even as you just mentioned video, oftentimes if I'm researching something, if I'm going to go to Red Rocks or to Leavenworth or something, I'll pull up the boulders that are within my range and watch some videos on it. And maybe those climbers are a little stronger than me, or maybe they're right where I'm at. But it doesn't always just have to be at the gym, because I'm watching like some beta videos about where I'm going to go, and it's not likely that's a V14 climber on a V4. So I'm able to even pick some things up just on YouTube. And that's something we can all do, even if we're not able to get to a gym regularly or out to a crag regularly. If we train a lot at home, we don't have access to facilities, you can still find some people in your neighborhood. I do that on Moonboard too. If I'm getting stumped on a Moonboard V5, I'll be looking up Moonboard videos. And again, it's not likely that they're all ravioli biceps. There's going to be a lot of V5 or V6 climbers that are doing those, and you can pick up a lot from that. So yeah, man, I love that one. I think that's great, and a way for us to stay psyched and engaged, even if we're not able to climb, if we've got an injury or we're just on a rest day or we're sitting at work and we've got 15 minutes during our lunch break. That's a good one to implement. All right, man, let's keep cranking.
Okay. So number three, as far as barriers for the barriers that prevent people from leveling up technically, is they haven't encountered.
All right. That wraps up your free intro here to this pro clinic with Nate Drolet. I'm so sorry to do the fade out there, but man, I'm telling you, this interview continues for another 2 hours. Two full hours, 11 more barriers that are holding us back from technical mastery, and it is really, really good stuff. So what does Nate cover over the next 2 hours of this masterclass? How about the most important question to ask ourselves when we fall? How to study other climbers but avoid a common mistake on who we watch? What we can learn from video games as it pertains to our climbing? A habit that elite climbers have that we should all try to adopt? Why strength might be hurting our skill. That's right, why our strength might be hurting our skill. The three things to focus on right now in order to get better, and what we can learn from the V3 that Adam Ondra didn't flash. All that and so much more. It's so, so good, you guys. And all of that is available for the price of a beer right now over on Patreon or Apple subscriptions. Or actually, you can get access to it for zero cost right now with a free trial. Got free trials going on Apple as well as Patreon. So if you're an iPhone person, you can instantly access the full episode this moment by just double-clicking there in your podcast player, or everybody can swing over to patreon.com/thestruggleclimbingshow. That link is right there in your show notes, and sign up for a free trial. Or you could just go ahead and sign up for real and pay me a few bucks, because that is how I keep creating all of this stuff here in the podcast/utility closet. So if you like it, I'd really appreciate your support. And of course, you can cancel anytime if you don't feel like you're getting value. But speaking of value, there's now more than 50 hours of exclusive content for you climbers over on Patreon. So I think it's probably worth that beer that you buy me each month. And I could really go for a beer right now. So thank you so much. Hey, Nate, if these crushers want to learn even more after this pro clinic and maybe even work on you one-on-one, where should they go? And also, what's going on with your climbing? What are your goals?
Oh, dang. I don't talk about my climbing too much. Yeah, if people want to reach out to me, you can reach out to me at NateRolet on Instagram. Also, I'm on YouTube now. I'm putting out videos around technique, skill work, just how to try and climb better. I can also leave an email in the show notes too. So yeah, you're more than welcome to reach out to me that way. And then as far as what I'm excited for with climbing, I am trying to get back into sport climbing this year. That's the plan. So there's a lot of short to like mid-length routes locally in Salt Lake. So between American Fork and then some of the shorter crags in Maple. So like the compound in Box Canyon. So I want to do that. Back in 2019, I had this huge plan of becoming a sport climber again. So that was what I did forever, was I sport climbed, and I always spent kind of half and half sport climb boulder. But then at one point I was like, well, I need to level up sport climbing, so I'm going to boulder more to get more powerful. Never got back. And, you know, sport climbing is way more fun when you're in good shape. It is terrible when your endurance is bad. So it's one of those things where I've always been like, okay, I need to take the time, build the endurance. In 2019, I did. In that fall, even though on paper, like, scoreboard was pretty empty, I had a tremendous sport climbing season, and I was like, oh, I'm back. Like, this is it. I'm hooked. And then that was all the way through the winter, and then the pandemic happened, and I have not tied in since. But so I've wrangled together a bunch of local sport climbing partners, and that's my goal. I'm going to start with just the little micro routes this year, get back in the habit of clipping bolts, of doing, you know, the whole crag thing, getting used to all that again and all the tactics and technique that go into sport climbing and build that base. And yeah, I'm really excited to get fully back into sport climbing.
The Struggle's carbon neutral in partnership with the Honnold Foundation and is a proud member of the Plugtone Audio Collective, a diverse group of the best, most impactful podcasts in the outdoor industry. This show is produced and hosted by me, Ryan Devlin. Thank you all so much again for listening. I hope your training and climbing are going great. And if you are struggling like me, well, just remember that the struggle makes us stronger.